Take a moment to get organized, counsel for appellant, and we're ready to begin when you are.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jeffrey Sheridan. I am the attorney for the appellant in this matter. His name is Kenneth Carlson. The matter is before the court this morning on an appeal from Mr. Carlson's loss of his implied consent hearing in Chisago County District Court. I should note at the outset that I got lots of help on this brief, and somehow in the midst of all of that, an important case was omitted that I wanted to bring to the court's attention, and that was State versus Pezdersky. And that is at 352 Northwest 2nd 85, case from this court in 1984. So I would like to add that into the mix as you wrestle with the issues before you today.
What end? Why are we interested in that case?
I think Pezdersky is probably the closest set of facts to the facts that you have before you here today, and that is whether the automobile could be used as a place of refuge to avoid a domestic conflict in the home. That was the facts there. Mr. Pezdersky had arrived home. There wasn't a lot of discussion about the fact that he had arrived home drunk in his vehicle and had entered his home and decided he didn't want to have a confrontation with his girlfriend, and so he went back out and slept in his truck and was found there some number of hours
later. Are you raising a necessity defense?
No, the question ultimately is for
wasn't
this.
That the case that said, you know, you could raise a necessity defense if there's a domestic abuse situation?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's Axelberg. You're thinking
of
Axelberg.
All right, I'm thinking of the wrong case.
That's all right. Okay. No.
So this is a physical control
case. It is a physical control case.
It's not a case of newly, you know, the abuse of discretion for not vacating the judgment.
No,
okay.
It's a physical control case. And so the physical control cases seem to get special treatment up here. And I to sort of emphasize that point, let me just pose a hypothetical that if a woman had gone to her mother's house for Christmas Eve and had intending to spend the night in her mother's house, consumed a bunch of alcohol while having dinner with the family, and then when it came time to exchange presents, she went out to her minivan and used the key to open the door and entered the minivan for the purpose of extracting the gifts. And had climbed into the minivan, and a police officer happened to be sitting down at the end of the street, having just finished a domestic dispute call, saw her staggering down the driveway and enter the van using the key and enter the van with the key in her possession. Would she be subject to being prosecuted for fourth-degree DWI when it turned out she had a 0.12 alcohol concentration? And would her license revocation be upheld for being in physical control of a motor vehicle? I pose that hypothetical to the court because I think we're all a bunch of smart people. We were all able to pass a bar exam at some point in our lives. And yet, I don't think the answer to that question is clear. And the idea that we should be here in 2019 and not be able to provide a clear answer to that question shines a light on what happens when we get talking about this idea of physical control. Physical control, if you look at Chapter 169A, 03, is the definition sections of the impaired driving code. The first thing it does is make reference to the definition sections in the 169 code. And between them, there are about 130 definitions of terms and words that we're supposed to use as we read through the impaired driving code. And conspicuously absent from the list of definitions is a definition of the word drive, operate, or physical control of an automobile. None of those terms is defined anywhere by the legislature. And I bring that to the court's attention because every time we talk about a physical control case, it seems to me that there are there's an elephant in the room, actually three elephants in the room, and we seem to ignore them on every single occasion. One of those elephants is the separation of powers, The other elephant in the room is the void for vagueness doctrine, and the third elephant in the room is the rule of lenity. The first one I talk about is this issue of separation of powers. Because the legislature...
When you talk about where? In your brief?
I'm sorry. No, I'm presenting this as sort of the lens that I would ask the court keep in mind or look through as you're deciding whether, in fact, what Mr. Carlson did in this case constitutes physical control, bearing in mind that the legislature has never defined that term. And the reason the legislature...
Well, So you cite in your brief cases where we have construed what physical control, or where we and the Supreme Court...
Yes, have, you, this court...
Have construed physical control. Are you saying that the statute needs further construction by us, or are you saying that under that standards as announced in those cases that there was insufficient, or that the circumstances didn't indicate physical control here?
I think the standards announced in those cases, each one of them provides ultimately some refuge for anyone to say, this case is like my case, and that none of them is actually based upon what the policymaking branch of government has told us physical control means.
So what should the standard be that you are asking us to announce in this case? Is that what you're suggesting, we should be announcing a new standard or making a new...
Well, what I would love to see this court do is to say that because the legislature has not defined this term, it is impossible for us to determine whether what Mr. Carlson did was or was not physical control, and tell the legislature once and for all that they need to define this term. That, again, is the separation of powers question. Why is it that we have this body of case law and that talks about all of these different factors, these different non-exclusive factors that go to the question of whether a person's in physical control? So we'll switch over to the void for vagueness elephant in the room, and that is that every person in this state is presumed to know the law, and the law has got to be clear enough that a person of ordinary intelligence can actually tell what behavior is prohibited. That's the concept of the void for vagueness. Again, I ask you to look through that lens when you're trying to decide here whether this case falls into the category of physical control of an automobile. Because the doctrine of physical control has been handed down by this court case by case by case by case, and they are not entirely consistent. What you talk about is looking at the totality of the circumstances, and each one of the cases, actually the one cited by the commissioner, all have some element of a vehicle being in a recent predicament, but that's not necessary, and that it appears that the person had been recently driving, but that's not necessary, that the keys were in the car, and that actually used to be necessary until the unpublished case cited by the district court in this case, where the keys could be somewhere in a short walking distance, all of which ultimately culminates in the question of whether the person could reasonably be in a position where they might embark upon this drunken journey and endanger the public. We invented all of that here in this building. The legislature hasn't told us that that's what they want. We actually have a jury instruction in the criminal jury, the JIGS, that provides a definition of what physical control is, and that's nowhere in our code book. Nowhere has the legislature said, this is what we mean physical control means.
And nothing would preclude them from doing that. I mean, I'm having a little trouble with your argument because it seems to me you're arguing we should ignore precedent as the law has evolved on this point with the definition.
No, I will point you to Pazdurski. I can point to a case that says that you can be in your car for the purpose of avoiding a domestic confrontation with your partner. Okay, which is what Mr. Carlson said he testified to here.
But the district court found him to not be credible.
Well, okay. Then the next question is that every case that the commissioner pointed out to you says that the keys need to be in the possession of the driver, in the vehicle. Not necessarily in his hand, not necessarily in the ignition, but in the seat, in the under the seat, somewhere in the car. And the testimony in this case is that the keys were not in the car, that they were in the kitchen hanging on a hook, and the district court found, well, that's close enough. So, but even applying the sort of what I think of as, you know, ever-moving goalposts here with regard to what is and is not physical control, I can point to all sorts of cases that say this isn't physical control. But we're still left with this problem of that's not what the legislature said they meant when they included the term physical control. It is not something that, I mean, unless we're expecting people of ordinary intelligence to have read your entire body of case law and be able to say that definitively is physical control or that definitively is not. What about our woman in the minivan on Christmas Eve who's good there to retrieve her presents? There is plenty of case law that would say that she could be prosecuted for being in physical control of a motor vehicle, and plenty of case law that says if her license is revoked under those circumstances that you would uphold it. But there's also plenty of case law that says that's not the case. All right? And so what I'm saying is that if we look through the lens of void for vagueness, and part of the problem is that you usually use the void for vagueness doctrine to look at something that the legislature has passed and then decide whether or not a person of ordinary intelligence would be able to understand what conduct is prohibited. But here the legislature never passed anything. So you're actually looking at your own case law and trying to decide whether citizens of the state of Minnesota could read that entire body of case law and come to a conclusion about whether a particular piece of conduct is prohibited or not. And then, of course, in the back of the room, we have that elephant that is the rule of lenity, right? Because the case law also talks about the fact that this is to be deemed a remedial statute and to be given the broadest possible interpretation in favor of public safety and against the private interest of the driver. This is a criminal statute. It is a crime to be in physical control of a motor vehicle under the influence of alcohol, and yet we use this language that suggests that somehow the rule of lenity is ignored in cases when we talk about physical control. So these are the lenses that I'm asking the court to put back on and then look at this situation here. And like I said, my preferred is that you would say, you know what, there is not enough clarity in this statute for any person of ordinary intelligence to know what they can and cannot do, and therefore we are not going to decide this issue. We are going to kick it back to the legislature with directions that they need to tell us what they mean. And once and for all, after 42 years of having a physical control statute that has never contained a definition, to actually compel them to tell us what they mean.
So you're making an argument to us that we should declare the statute unconstitutional, void for vagueness.
The problem is that the statute doesn't have a definition that you could define as void for vagueness. I suppose the complete lack of a definition.
The argument you're making might be, we should not enforce the statute because it's unconstitutionally void.
I think that is probably true, but without going there, I think you can also look at what took place in this particular case, looking through that lens and try to decide whether Mr. Carlson...
You're raising it, but you're not really raising it because it's not briefed. It's
it
not
isn't,
mentioned.
That's
I
correct.
I assume we don't have notice to the Attorney General that you're raising a constitutional challenge to a statute,
don't.
So you're just sort of throwing that out there.
I'm just saying that's the lens that we should be looking through when we're trying to decide whether Mr. Carlson acted in a way that was contrary to statute that has no definition of what behavior is actually prohibited. And so it is under those circumstances, again, that we find ourselves before this court. The other issue we raised, and I'm running out of time here, I see, is that whether the court should have allowed this case to be reopened to allow additional testimony or additional evidence. Now, the state refers to that as, well, all you wanted to do was put in the 911. What we wanted to do was have that information disclosed to us in the time when we requested that it be disclosed to us so that we could have developed a trial strategy that would have included the knowledge that Mrs. Carlson never said what the officers claimed in their police reports that she said. and that whether that means just listening to the 911 recording or having Mrs. Carlson come in and testify and perhaps answer questions about where the keys to the truck were located, all of those kinds of things were taken from the petitioner because of the state's failure to respond in any meaningful way to multiple discovery requests. When that material finally came to light, the court should have allowed the hearing to be reopened and to have taken that additional evidence. I see my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sheridan. Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court and counsel, William Young, Assistant Attorney General on behalf of the commissioner. At the outset, I want to discuss the Pazirsi case that was mentioned by Mr. Sheridan here today. And just the case was decided, I believe, in 1984, 1985, and it was a case in which this court found that there was not physical control in which a man was found sleeping in his vehicle after some sort of domestic disturbance, and he was there sort of just sleeping it off while things calmed down. Those facts aren't applicable here. We have, under the facts here, Mr. Carlson, who was not found to be credible, as Judge Hallbrooks mentioned, he was asked by his attorney. So when he went out to the pickup truck, this is on page 36 of the transcript, were you trying to avoid your wife? There's an objection for leading that was sustained. The next question, what was the reason you went out to the pickup? And he said, to assess the damages, and, you know, I can't fix in the amount of time that she's going to see it. You know, I didn't know what the heck to do. So there's no actual testimony here from Mr. Carlson that he was avoiding a domestic. Additionally, we have a lot of different facts here. We have the fact that it was warm inside the truck, as the responding sergeant testified to. Didn't touch the hood, but he said it was warmer in the cab than outside. We have the fact that there's a set of keys there. The district court didn't make factual findings one way or the other as to whether those keys actually operated the truck. The district court said, at the very least, if those weren't the right keys, the keys were just in the house. I don't think there's anything to suggest that that finding would be clearly erroneous. And so I would also note that since Pazderski, the Supreme Court has...
Follow that logic. Couldn't we say that, you know, if you're at home, you drink, you're intoxicated, you go to bed, but you're in your house with your keys and the car is in the garage, the car is under your control, because you could easily go out and start it.
Right, and I don't necessarily think those are the facts here because, again,
right,
there were...
That seems to be sort of a slippery slope if we say, well, you don't need the keys with you in the automobile. If you could get them out of the house, that's enough.
I would agree, and I think that as recently as in the Fleck case decided by the Supreme Court, they discussed, again, how physical control is sort of evaluated under the totality of the circumstances. And in Fleck, they note... excuse me for a minute. They give a list of about five criteria, and one of them is the location of the keys. And here we have, and not only that, but the location of the person who's being accused of being in physical control, whether in the driver's seat, passenger seat, outside, nearby, you know, whatever the case may be. Here we have the district court making findings that Mr. Carlson was not credible. And while it didn't make an additional finding that those keys were the keys for the truck, it inherently rejected his argument that he had driven hours earlier, had come back just before the police showed up, to a fresh accident, sat in the driver's seat with a set of keys nearby, a warm cab, had been drinking only after, not before he crashed into the garage door. By rejecting all of that, while the court didn't make that finding, and it does sort of potentially open the door to that slippery slope, I think that, again, because this is a totality standard, I don't think that there's really going to be too much of a risk of a set of facts where someone's ultimately going to be charged whether they're inside or their keys are inside and they're nowhere near the vehicle. I think it's going to be a lot of connected dots to finally get to there that I don't think there should be a huge concern of this court for opening that door. Getting back to Pazderski for a minute, I would note that since that case, the Minnesota Supreme Court decided the Starfield case and the Fleck case, again, where it readdressed the issue of physical control. And in Fleck, in the outset, in the intro paragraph of Fleck, it notes that it was relying upon an order that was relying upon Pazderski to find no physical control, and then it rejected that analysis and said, no, this is physical control when a person is sleeping in the vehicle, all those sort of facts, again, to the totality standard.
So getting back to the key question, if the district court didn't find that the keys were in the vehicle, did not find that the keys were in the vehicle, right? Said it doesn't matter because they are at most were in the house.
The district court, correct. The district court said there were a set of keys there. It did not specifically find that those were the keys to that truck, just that there was a set of keys there.
So is the physical control at the moment, are you saying that the other circumstances show physical control like prior to their arrival because the evidence shows that he was driving because it was warm, as opposed to physical control at the moment of their arrival? That's what I'm
And the district court seemed to find, and again, also in responding to the Rule 60 motion, that there was physical control at the moment the police arrived, but also just before they arrived, based upon the what appeared to be fresh tire tracks, the fresh damage, as the sergeant testified to based upon his training experience, the fact that the cab of the truck was warmer than the outside temperature. The Mr. Carlson himself told the officer it had recently happened. He didn't say hours ago. He said recently, according to the sergeant. And so,
and at that point of time, just by presumably the keys were actually in the vehicle being, because the vehicle is being operated, that's why it's warmer and that's why it had just been driven. So you're saying that those findings were that the district court found that there was physical control prior to their arrival.
Right. And again, I think the district court still extended it by saying even when they arrived, there was still physical control. But I think she found both. The district court found both before, shortly before they arrived and when they arrived, there would have been physical control. And while the location of the keys may be, I wouldn't say dispositive, but may weigh against a finding at the moment they arrived, it wouldn't weigh against that finding that just before they arrived, Mr. Carlson had been in physical control, considering that she found him to not be credible with his testimony as to what the timeline he testified as to had happened. I would note that, as Mr. Sheridan has noted, there is about 38 years worth of case law on physical control dating back from this court and the Supreme Court, and it's pretty consistent as to how these cases have been analyzed. Again, it's a totality test, so when a totality test is applied, it should cut both ways in certain times because of the different circumstances. That's not surprising, but it doesn't make it vague or unclear or confusing. We have these set of circumstances to look at that we've been given the guidance from this court and from the Supreme Court, and I think the district court correctly found, based upon the facts that were presented, especially considering the rejection of Mr. Carlson's testimony, that Mr. Carlson had been in physical control shortly before or at the time they arrived. Then getting ahead to the Rule 60 motion, this court reviews that decision for an abuse of discretion standard. And again, there's nothing under the in the 911 call, which I would note the commissioner never had. It wasn't as if the commissioner was sitting on evidence and withholding evidence. Obviously, I can't speak to what happened with the county attorney's office, but there's no accusation of spoliation or withholding by the commissioner herself. Under that standard, this evidence was cumulative to the testimony that was provided. It was created to sort of impeach some of the testimony, but again, it corroborated some of what Mr. Carlson was testifying to that was rejected, but there's nothing here that was new that would tip the result the other way, especially given that the rejection of Mr. Carlson's testimony is not being credible. And so I believe that, so the record shows that the district court did not abuse its discretion in denying that motion. Are there any other questions from your honors?
No.
The Mr. commissioner would respectfully ask that the case be affirmed.
Thank you. Mr. Sheridan, rebuttal.
I think in response to Judge Larkin's question about how far does this go, if I took my same hypothetical and instead of my client using the key, and it's not quite as hypothetical as I might have led you to believe earlier, but instead of using the key to open the door, had instead used a key fob from inside the house and then hung the keys on the hook next to the back door and gone out to retrieve her presence in that way. Using Judge Dowdle's analysis here, that too is physical control because she could have easily gone back into the house, retrieved the keys, and begun her drunken journey. So I do think it is an extremely slippery slope, especially when, as Judge Dowdle did, she removed the idea from all of those cases. And if you look at the litany that are cited in the commissioner's brief, all of them have as an element that the keys were found somewhere in the car, and now suddenly even that doesn't matter anymore.
But there are keys in this car. Is there anything that prevents sort of a circumstantial inference that they are the keys to that car, given that the hood is warm and the other circumstances?
Yes. Whether you like the testimony or not, there's testimony from the petitioner that they weren't the keys to the...
The court didn't believe him, so...
And then there's the test... Well, okay. And then there's the testimony that from the deputy who read the implied consent process, who agreed that, yes, indeed, he had reported at the time that the keys that were on his person were not keys to the truck, and the investigating deputy's testimony that he didn't know. So remembering that the standard of proof is preponderance of the evidence, the officer saying, I don't know if those were the keys to the truck or not, the statement by Mr. Carlson at the time that he was being read the implied consent advisory that they were not in fact the keys, and the complete lack of any further investigation to determine whether the keys they had in their possession would in fact start the vehicle. This is the commissioner's.
Do that, and I ask you because you have a ton of these cases.
I do, and the commissioner has the burden of proving.
No, but what I'm saying is, as part of their investigation, when they find keys in a car, do they normally put them in the ignition to see if they work?
They do. That is an element that they know I'm going to cross.
It prevents them from doing that.
Right. So if in fact you are the one with the burden, the commissioner of public safety, and it is your burden to prove that the keys were in the car, the lack of evidence is not a fair preponderance of the evidence. And that is what exists in the absence of Mr. Carlson's testimony. The best you can say about the state's evidence, the evidence from the officers themselves, is that they don't know whether the keys would have started the truck or not. And that is not evidence that the keys were present in the car. So again, the judge's order was, well, it was close enough because they were in the house, and then we start our way down this slippery slope that even that litany of cases cited by the commissioner doesn't embrace that. And so we have this one unpublished decision, but that's how we get our camel's nose under the tent and begin this slippery slope. Again, going back to the fact that it would be nice if the legislature would actually tell us what physical control is. And they're never going to tell us because they have this perfect place to hide, and that is the 42 or 38 years worth of your case law that presumably everyone in the state is presumed to know. They all must know, even this unpublished case that says the keys being in the house is good enough to be found in physical control, right? That every person is presumed to know the law, and under the void for vagueness doctrine, you would analyze that if, in fact, the legislature had written it down somewhere. But that didn't happen. You wrote it down. This building created an element of a crime that everyone is presumed to know without the legislature, public policy branch of government ever telling you that's what they wanted. And I think it's wrong, and it's going to continue until some three of you or seven of you upstairs says no. This is something that the legislature should tell us, and we're not going to try to guess what physical control is anymore. We're not going to expect the people of this state to try to apply a totality of the circumstances test to determine whether or not what they did was prohibited by the statute or not. And that's because we need to stop ignoring those three elephants in the room, put those glasses on, and view this through those lenses. And if you do, you will arrive at the conclusion that this is not physical control. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sheridan. Thank you, Mr. Young. Matter's been submitted.